What's up, my friends? It's Rick Mulready here. Listen, if you are feeling like you're struggling to keep up with all the AI opportunities, or maybe you're wondering how to even start leveraging AI in your business without all the headaches, the AIify newsletter is designed with you in mind, my friend. Every week, I simplify AI for you, showing you how to apply it and integrate it into your business so that you can work less and profit more. As one of my readers put it, it's a must-have for any entrepreneur who wants to get more done in less time. And they said there's a lot of noise out there and your information is up to date, yet just feels more calm and more relatable. So I want to invite you to sign up for the AIify newsletter. It's free. Just go to rickmulready.com/newsletter. That's rickmulready.com/newsletter. Hey, my friend, before we get into today's episode with Eric, a quick announcement for you. We are accepting applications for my Accelerator coaching program. So Accelerator is for online course creators and online coaches who are already doing well in your business. If you're averaging, say, 7 to 8K per month minimum in your online business, and you're looking to scale, you're looking to optimize your business to the next level, whatever that next level looks like for you, but you feel like you're kind of spinning your wheels, you're overwhelmed, you are probably very discouraged, or maybe even burnt out, right? You're not really sure what next step to take, then my Accelerator coaching program is for you, okay? If you'd like to learn more and apply, it's application only, go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. All right, let's cue the music and dive in. Welcome to the Art of Online Business podcast. My name is Rick Mulready, and I'm an online business coach, Facebook and Instagram ads expert, lifestyle entrepreneur, and I'm a total coffee snob as well. Each week, you're going to learn actionable strategies, mindsets, and tips that take the guesswork out of growing and scaling a profitable online business so that you can truly become an entrepreneur with impact. This podcast is your secret weapon for fast-tracking the growth of your online business. Let's do this. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to the podcast. This is episode number 498. That's right, close to 500 here. And thank you, as always, for tuning in today. I super appreciate you. Hope all is going well, whatever you are up to right now. To say that I am super excited to share this interview with you is an understatement. Also, to be completely vulnerable and transparent, I was a little nervous to do this interview with Erica. And I told her, and she laughed, because I do not get nervous with any kind of interview. Just I've been doing this a long time, and it just really, I love it so much. And so, I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit nervous about this interview here today. Now, I am not one to do interviews with like a whole bunch of questions in front of me. I literally sit in front of, I have a blank document in front of me to take some notes as we're going, but it's like, I'm sitting down for coffee with my guest and we're chatting over some coffee here. And so I was super, super excited to bring you Erica Corday here to the podcast today. And Erica is a DEI coach and consultant, diversity, equality, and inclusion, but not just any inclusion, intentional inclusion. And I talked all about this last week on the episode last week. So if you heard last Wednesday's episode, you heard me talk about Erica, who is my coach and consultant in the area of diversity, equality, and inclusion, and how that is now taking shape into my business. And this is the direction that I'm going to be more intentionally inclusive in what I want to do with my business. And so if this is something that's of interest to you, you are going to love today's episode with Erica, because she is freaking brilliant and she's an expert. And you're going to hear today, like, how she just unpacks things in a way that is totally understandable and in a non-judgmental way. And you're going to hear me make some mistakes during today's interview. So, and towards the end, she gets very tactical, by the way, because how do we hire with diversity, equality, and intentional inclusion when we're thinking about that, and that's the way we want to show up and lead our business. How can we change our company culture, et cetera? So we get very tactical towards the end, But let's dive right into it, to this amazing conversation with Erica Cordea. Erica, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, Rick. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing really well. So I'm so excited to have you on today. And I know that you and I have been talking for a little while about having you on the show. And I wanted to intentionally have you on the show this week because last week I released the episode, solo episode, sharing where I am with things right now and the shift in business that I'm making. And you've been very instrumental in providing a lot of clarity for me along the way. And so I wanted to bring you onto the show here and have you share your expertise, because I've only known you for a little while now, but like, just your approach is non-judgmental. Like, I never have a fear of saying something to you or saying the wrong thing to you. Well, I do, to be honest. Let's be honest. I do have a fear of saying the wrong thing. But even if I do, it's like, you're not judging me, like in the way that you, like the way that we talk about things is from that non-judgmental filter, if you will, which I super, super appreciate that. So we're going to talk about everything that we're starting to talk about here. But before we do, who is Erica Cordea and how have you gotten to where you are right now as the expert that you are?
Hello, everyone that is listening. My name is Erica Cordea. I am a coach and consultant, and everything that I do is through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So the supporting of individuals, businesses, and brands comes through that lens of how we can create structures and decision-making processes that reflect how diversity, equity, and inclusion are not just the way you do one thing or just something ancillary that you do. It's how you do all things. And I want to say thank you for everything that you said. And I'm also going to say that it's humbling, because for me, it's so much more about the impact that I can create and less about me. And my expertise is less about me being an expert and more about me bringing the experiences that I've had being a Black woman my whole life. Yeah. And what I've learned being in the beauty industry for over 20 plus years and now being an ICF accredited coach, and how this really does provide me an opportunity to support people through their efforts in the businesses that they run to shift the way that our world works, to shift who has the spotlight, who is amplified, who has the opportunity to be visible, who has the opportunity to build worth, who has the opportunity to show up as their whole, full, and authentic selves. So all of these things are just a few of the things that go into the coaching and consulting I do that I absolutely love.
Right before we thank you for that, and I'm really excited to dive into this. And right before we hit record, I'd said to you, it was scary. Well, I mean, frankly, all this has been scary for me to share where I feel like I've messed up in the past, where I've been scared, why I haven't shared things, why I haven't stepped up, if you will, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of it has come with the maturity of myself and the business, where if somebody doesn't agree with me, and there's going to be those people, of course, right? On either side, right? And I'm totally okay with it at this point. And if I was early in my business, I don't know that I would have, to be honest with you, I don't know that I would have been as willing to stand up. What do you see for, does that make sense? What do you see for people who are earlier in their business and are really want to make a shift and really want to make an impact with the platform that they're building from or through the perspective of diversity, equality, and inclusion, but yet are afraid of standing up, if you will, and putting out their thoughts on a more public level?
So the interesting thing that I think comes up when we talk about really being clear about what matters to you and almost going public about that in a way of like, this is how I operate, this is how I'm going to do all things, and doing it in a way that you are positioning yourself to be judged or for people to pass on you and say yes or say no. Like, it is It is something that you don't have any control over what's going to happen once you have decided to be in alignment with your values and your ethics front facing out loud. And so two things I think are happening. One is we're acknowledging our lack of control. Mm. And for a lot of people, that is calling on their struggles with what do you mean I can't control this? And so that's a struggle. And actually, I'm gonna say there's three things. Two is the fact that it's calling on you to have to be vulnerable in a way that you're not an expert in this space. And mm-hmm. so for people that market themselves at being an expert, it pushes them directly against, but I have more things to learn. And does this somehow make me less equipped to do what I do? Because if I'm not the expert, period, then what does that mean? How does that impact the way that I'm being perceived and whether or not people want to listen to me, whether they're willing to invest in me? And the other piece that I think you are dealing with specifically because of you occupying space in the world as a white man is the fact that there are times that you don't have to worry nearly as much about whether or not people are going to be okay with how you feel. You don't have to worry about what you're going to lose in the same way. You don't have to worry about how this is going to impact you financially, physically, mentally, emotionally, in the same exact way as a number of other people, me being one example of someone else that doesn't have that same privilege. And so you're directly running against all of the things that you have easy access to and saying, I don't want this same type of access if it means that I'm taking something from someone else, because what does that say about me? And I don't want to be that person by default. Yeah. Because I just go along with the program, the silent complicity.
Yeah. Y'all, that's a perfect example of how I started out by saying level of maturity and at this point in the business, but yet what Erica just said is exactly what she's able to do. And, you know, like I mentioned in the episode last week, like that hasn't been, you know, I haven't realized that. Right. You just said as like as a white man, I haven't had to worry about those types of things. Mm-hmm. But that was, I mean, I wasn't aware of that. And I'm
you
not saying like
you don't know.
Exactly. I'm not saying like this is an excuse. I'm just saying like over the past several months here, the past year, it's been, you know, this awakening. And as time has gone on, I'll be honest, especially here in 2021, it's like enough is enough. I need to educate myself. I need to, this is not what I want to be doing. How I've run the business and how I've shown up as a leader from this perspective is not what I want to do going forward. And so, yeah, recognizing that I haven't had to worry about those types of things, regardless, frankly, of where I'm at in the business or not, and what I'm taking away from others, whether I realize it intentionally or not, is not something that I want to do. And so how can people start to incorporate this more into their business? And I say this meaning inclusivity, right? Of, because I'll tell you, like you and I've talked about this, I'm having more and more people apply for my accelerator program, which is my high level coaching program, who want to know where I stand on diversity, equality, inclusion, inclusive, like they want to know. And I'm like, oh, that's because I haven't made it known what my beliefs are, where I stand on this. And I've seen a big shift, especially here in 2021, that people are starting to ask more of these questions. Like, how do you feel about this? And I think it's so, I'm loving that it's happening. And I think it's becoming even more and more important, which I'm so glad about. How can people begin to bring diverse, you know, if they want to shift their business, where do they start with this? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it has to start with a mindset first before they kind of take action.
Exactly. I think before you can worry about, you know, what is the piece of my company culture that needs to change? How am I changing my hiring? What is it forward facing that needs to change? You have to start with yourself because you are informing what is happening inside of the business. And so if you end up being the weak link because you have not done your own work, then these efforts are simply superficial. And they, number one, they won't stick. Number two, they actually won't make any impact. And the entire point is to make impact. It's not, for some people, maybe it is. That's a whole nother conversation. I'm not speaking of those people. But, you know, the point is to do things that are going to create an outcome that is different. And so you have to do something different. And there's no place to figure out what needs to happen. What did you not know that you're beginning to learn and that you're willing to be a lifelong learner in? Because this is not a 3 month, 6 month. Oh, and there's no intensive for this work. And I've had to have that conversation with people. Like, this takes time, and I'm holding space for something that you're going to continue to do throughout your life. Mm. And if you don't take the time to figure out, what do you need to do differently? What did you not know? What do I need to unpack and pay attention to with my own preconceived notions, with my own unconscious bias, my own considerations of what is normal and what is not? What is it that I need to work on in order to begin to even remotely create a space where it is safe to bring people into the fold that want to learn from me, that don't look, live, or love like me, that can show up as their whole selves and not have to worry about keeping up a shield in order to protect themselves while they're taking this information from me?
Yeah. I'm thinking about that right now from the perspective of, because when you start, as we're talking about this, you mentioned hiring, internal culture within your business and forward facing, et cetera, and like establishing that mindset first and foremost. So let's say somebody has made a decision. They're like, you know what? This is a shift that I want to make. Because I talked about last week, I was very vulnerable and authentic in saying, look, I do not have all the answers. I'm learning as we go. And I spoke here on the show about, hey, for anybody listening right now who wants to go on this journey and learn together, let's do this. And I'm so glad you bring up that this is not like a course, right? It's like, okay, by, you know, June 30th, we're good, right? It's like what I always say. It's like, you're working on your mindset. It's not like, okay, you figure out one day, okay, my mindset is good. I've gotten to the point, I don't have to keep learning. And so what does that look like? So that somebody's made up their mind that they want to shift. They want to, you know, I titled the episode last week, Impact Over, It's Far Greater Than Intent. And this is something that you and I have talked about. So how does one, okay, I made the decision to make change. Where does one start sort of, I don't know if the word is tactically, if you will, where does one start?
One of the biggest things to me that stands out over anything else is finding the space within yourself to acknowledge that you have been wrong and that you will continue to be wrong. That there's a lot of learning to do, that there's a lot of unlearning to do. And that as you go on this journey and continue to pick up pieces of knowledge, you pick up context from individuals so that we're not thinking of, you know, knowledge around these things as something that comes from one person and it's, you know, monolithic information and now we're all good. There's context that can be picked up as well. But you have to tangibly hold space gently for yourself to remember that you're going to be wrong. And the reason that's so important for me is that there's a lot of ways to do work in the space that I operate. And sometimes it does require for somebody to proverbially shake you, because sometimes kinder and gentler doesn't always work. And at the same time, I don't think that, you know, kind of in the spirit of Brene Brown, I don't think that shame and blame and guilt are adequate motivators to get people to do something differently. Mm. I understand why it shows up. There are points to where in my head, as a Black woman that has lived an entire 41 years, including this past year, and knowing that there are moments when I'm like, well, you know, the DEI part of me says this, but the Black woman part of me says, well, you asked for that, whether it's the right thing or not in that moment, because I know that sometimes that's just what it is. And at the same time, I don't operate that way in how I facilitate coaching and consulting, because I don't truly think that it is the motivator for those that come to me that genuinely want to make change, me shaming you is not going to motivate you, and you shaming yourself won't either.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to know that one of the most important tangible pieces is you remembering that I'm never going to shame you the way that you're going to shame yourself, and that you shaming yourself is only going to stop you. And that is the biggest sin of all.
Yeah. And it's, you talk about that fragility, if you will. And, you know, my, I'll be honest, I don't think I've actually never talked about this. I actually think I've shared this with you, but okay. When all the horrible, the horrific things were happening last summer in 2020, shortly after that, my wife and I got into one of the biggest fights we've had in a long time because of, I was digging my heels in, and the title of the book, The White Fragility, and like sharing like why I wasn't wrong. And this is because I grew up in a small town, New Hampshire, and I had, you know, one boy of color in like literally my entire high school, one student out of 1400. And so I was like making excuses, and my wife is half Asian. Like my mother-in-law lives up in outside of San Francisco. She's afraid to go out. She's afraid to go out because of all of the Asian hate that's been going on. Right. And so it's been that real, and I bring this up because you and I mentioned this to you the other day. I had a woman apply for Accelerator, and one of her questions during the process was, why didn't you take action last year? And my brain kicked in, and I was defensive right off the bat. And I wasn't on that call with her. A member of my team was on the call with her. Mm-hmm. But I was aware that my brain was sort of kicking into defensiveness. Mm-hmm. And then the cool thing is, I think there's a lot of progress here. It lasted only a little bit. And then it was like, oh, you know what? I see her, I see why she's saying that. I can totally understand, because I haven't, again, going back to, I hadn't stood up and said anything. And right. So there's that, I don't know, I almost call it like an ego, like get over myself. And realize that, yeah, I messed up.
It is ego.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is programming that you as a white man at the top of the hierarchy over those that are not white, male, cisgendered, heteronormative, you know, all of these things that make you the standard, so to speak.
Yeah.
It is all of that programming showing up, reminding you of, hey, this is what you do. This is what you lean on.
Yeah.
And it is a process of recognizing, like you mentioned, the argument with your wife of where you were digging your heels in because your fragility took precedence over the feelings of the acknowledgement of, wait, there was one boy of color that had to exist that entire time in a place where he was not represented, possibly was not safe mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. And so none of those things about his experience popped up, but yours did. And you are given that programming. And so therefore, in that moment, you know, flash forward to when this, you know, prospective student gave you very vulnerably and honestly and transparently her experience and asked you questions and even held space for you to respond, which a lot of people, they're like, I don't even want to have this conversation with you because I don't feel like it's safe for me to do so. She allowed that to happen. And you felt that impulse kick in, which again, you're programmed to do that because that's what keeps the hierarchy in place. That's how systemic, that's why they stay systemic.
Yeah.
And you recognize it and said, wait, that's not right. That's not okay. And so it's that continuous action of noticing it and there being a split second less every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And just remember, and even if those split seconds, maybe they go up a few, but you still have enough wherewithal to recognize where am I actually prioritizing my own comfort and delicate sensibilities in this moment and violating my own values Or am I going to do the uncomfortable thing that really feels like the right thing to me?
Yeah.
Yet somebody else would clearly tell me I don't have to and I shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, amazing explanation and perspective and shining light on what I'm talking about here. Guys, another example right here with Erica. Like, and by the way, when I first reached out to Erica, like it was, I don't remember, it was early this year. And when there was like a 2 month time period between when I could first get on the phone with her, I knew that I'm like, all right, she's as good as, because you came as a recommendation from a really, really trusted friend of mine. And when I reached out to your team and it was like 2 months, I was like, yeah, this is, I found the right place, you know? But anyway, so I did respond. I took the time to respond back to this woman. It was actually on a Friday night. And I was like, you know what? This is really bothering me personally from the perspective of I want to respond to her. I want her to feel safe, to be able to know that she can feel safe to have this conversation. Because again, the team, a member of my team was having the conversation. I think from my understanding, did a great job with answering her. But I also wanted to chime in personally and sort of tell the story. Number one, you're right. Like I have not shown up as my best self since in the past year and have realized that. And this is what I'm doing now. And, you know, you say something that really resonates with me. You're like, we can't change. Like I can't change what I didn't do last year, but I can change going forward.
Right. And there's also that place of having to acknowledge when that moment comes up, there's that call within yourself to say, I need to absolve myself. I need to fix this situation. Mm. I need to correct it. I need. And so it's very eye focused if we're not careful to acknowledge that this is about what we can do and how we need to fix it versus what do you need? How have I not held space for you? What would make this different for you going forward? What would change this for someone else that may have similarities to you that aren't similar to me that would change this in the future? And so this is where it's so important to have that pause, which I do appreciate that you came into Voxer and we talked about this, because what can happen is for some people, they feel that urgency and they rush and they react. And it is very self-focused and it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
And you're not acknowledging how you are turning this into something about you personally as an individual and a human, and less about the experience that this person, again, is so generously sharing with you and giving you the gift of an opportunity to do something different. And if you don't pause to give yourself space to really take ownership of that, it can be overlooked and even worse, squandered.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned something there in what you were just describing of it's not about you, meaning the listener. Like it's not about us. It's not about me. And that was one thing that I really struggled with releasing that episode last week, frankly. And I do talk about it because I'm using the platform of here of the podcast. I'm sharing my experience and what I'm doing going forward. But I didn't want it to come across as like, oh, pat Rick on the back, like rah, rah, Rick, good for you. Mm-hmm. It was, I didn't want it to seem like this is about me. And again, I did mention it in the show, but how does one navigate that when, if they made the decision that this is an important aspect of the direction of the business that they now want to take and the impact that they can have, how do they think about not making it about themselves? If that makes sense.
I think that there can be a part of you that understands that you are showing a level of vulnerability and modeling to others of what's possible. But even in that, you have to remember to not make it about your own accolades or your own absolvement. I don't even know if absolvement is a word.
Sure. Yeah. I like it.
Like you're not seeking that in that moment. And sometimes that's an imperfect art of navigating that balance. but it's very much about what's the impact that I want to make? Who do I want to support? Who is this about? Who am I centering with this? Who am I amplifying with this? And so I think if you can give yourself the space to ask some of those types of questions, you can have enough of, again, that pause to kind of stop and really say, okay, well, what's really my intention here? What am I trying to do? And the benefit in your work with me is you do have this space to be able to talk through it. And this is where, for those that may not have that, this is where having that network and those trusted individuals that are on a similar path, you can kind of navigate these conversations. And you can say, hey, I want to do something different. And, you know, is this about me? Did I miss something? Please tell me so I don't go make an ass out of myself. I don't really want to do that.
I
would prefer to not do something that's going to be harmful when I could have tried to do something different. You can't negate every bit of harm, but you can do what you can to intentionally, you know, have a level of awareness. And everybody's not going to feel the same about it. So you have to acknowledge sure. that too. But I think, you know, and trying to have that space to really be clear first on what's the intention behind all of this? Why am I doing this? And if it's because I am uncomfortable, I feel like I was called out, I feel like I did something wrong, I want to be different. Well, that's reminding you that it's eye-focused. And we all have our eyes within that that we need to work through. But if that's the only thing that you're really coming up with, you need to take that pause before you hit play.
Yeah. And that kind of leads me really well to the next question that I want to address. And guys, by the way, like we are, I am going to ask Eric, like tactically, how do I, you know, how do we bring more diversity, equality, and inclusion into our team, hiring, company culture? We've started to talk a little bit about forward facing, but two things I really want to talk about. And you and I have talked very recently about this whole cancel culture, if you will. Because I'm not going to lie, like there was a concern about that when I released last week's episode. But then again, I was okay with it even before I released it, because again, this is the direction I'm going. And, you know, people, I don't want people to think like, oh, Rick's going to create a new, like Rick isn't going to teach what he teaches different. I mean, it's not like I'm creating a new offer. Like this is just how I'm being in the business and how I want myself in the business represented. And these are what my values are going forward. And this is what I stand for. And you can make that decision whether you align with that or not. And if you don't, that's okay. Like that's your decision. But there's a lot of people out there who are afraid to say something or stand up to if they believe one thing for fear of this cancel culture. And I asked you about this and I don't remember the exact words, but I was listening to it on Voxer and I'm like, man, that was like so well said. So what would you say to somebody who is concerned around, you know, cancel culture, if you will?
One of the first things is it that you're really concerned about cancel culture, or are you concerned with being held accountable? Because I think accountability is another completely different thing that people still struggle with just as much, if not more. Yeah. Because the reality is that this concept of cancel culture says, oh, you did this wrong, and so you're out of here. Having to be held accountable means, no, I am going to acknowledge that you did something wrong, and I am going to expect for you to do something different. That means you can't just exit stage left. That's actually scarier. And so the challenge is that there's too many people that want to conflate cancel culture with being held accountable and not understanding that if you do something wrong, you're going to be held accountable. But being held accountable gives you an opportunity to course correct, which is actually a gift. Again, that's saying, okay, now you can do something differently. You've learned. We all make mistakes. And so the challenge comes up because people are like, I don't want to be wrong. Well, if you don't want to be wrong, this life is not for you.
Yeah.
You're going to be wrong. And we have to make sure that we're doing our research, which was what I directed you to do around cancel culture, and really acknowledging, like, is it cancel culture that I'm afraid of, or am I afraid of doing the work and not knowing exactly how this has to play out and exactly how to get it right? And I don't want to not be the expert in this moment. And so if that's really what's happening, then there's a whole nother set of issues that are happening. But let's just not tell ourselves this lie. Let's not vilify the fact that now we have a way for people to be held accountable for things that they before could have done in the shadows that now can't be. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is, because now you can't just do, you know, you can't have trash behavior and nobody ever says or does anything about it,
right?
Which is where a number of people had to be held accountable for things, using like the Me Too movement as an example, because you did things for a long time and they didn't come to light and now they did. And so essentially cancel culture is basically you have a bigger spotlight that was held on you, but there's too many people that assume that accountability means that I'm canceled versus saying, I'm not going to assume that I'm canceled. I'm going to assume that I have the opportunity for redemption, because redemption is there for those that seek it. Are you willing to do the work?
Yeah. Now, what happens if that person digs their heels in and doesn't think they're doing anything wrong?
I wish I could say that that means that maybe you will ultimately be canceled, or maybe that changes the trajectory of things. I think it depends on the individual, because we've seen a number of individuals recently, some of which I just won't use their names because I refuse to utilize my platform to give them any airtime. But you have bad behavior. You've longstanding showed us bad behavior and you continue to do it. And you have recently decided, I'm going to double down on it and show you that I also don't see that there's an issue with it and that you have the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now not only have you had problematic behavior, but now we have stepped into the realm of mental health, in which case you want to gaslight people to make them feel like they did not see and experience and hear what they actually did. So there's a lot of people that live in the space of needing to be gaslit so that they can continue to gaslight others, because that is what allows for their privilege to stay intact. Because without it, the smoke and mirrors, all of a sudden, it looks a little janky, just a tad.
Yeah.
And so you need people to do that to you so you can continue to do it to others. And so you excuse the bad behavior. You say it wasn't that bad. Well, I don't really see the problem with it. No, because then you'll hope that there's somebody to come to your rescue in the same exact way. Mm. And so it's really about this system of, if we all stay in the fog and we convince others that this is the only place to exist, we can continue to keep this ruse going.
Yeah.
It's a lie.
I'm quiet because I'm like just taking all that in and processing all that. And, you know, in the online space, and look, I'm including myself in this at one point too, where when events happen, we say something online because everybody else is saying, or we think it's the right thing to do, but it's just words, right? It's not really, you know, again, it's why I named the podcast episode last week, Impact is Far Greater Than Intent. We say something because we feel like it's what we should do, but it kind of stops there. So how does one, if people truly want to change, because let's face it, there's been a lot of that over the past, you know, while. And if somebody truly wants to change, and let's say that they are being held accountable, what, you know, for anybody listening right now, and maybe that's happened or what have you, like, what's sort of the next step for them?
Patience, because it won't happen quickly. Because if you have had a transgression, you screwed something up, you messed up, you created harm, caused trouble, and not the good kind, there has to be this place of understanding that it won't go away overnight, and you won't know better overnight. And it takes time to earn trust from those that you have caused harm to. And this is someone that has actively done something and been called to the carpet, so to speak. Hmm. Even if you haven't done anything, it still takes time to earn that trust, because you may not have had an incident like someone else, but your lack of efforts or lack of action up to this point has still caused harm, intentionally or unintentionally. The impact still happened. And so you have to understand that it takes time. You have to understand that people aren't going to automatically trust you, especially not right away, if they do. And you have to understand that you are not entitled to absolution. It is not something that is just going to happen, let alone without you really having to put the work in for it. And you have to be putting in the work, less in a way of, I need to be forgiven, and more about the things that I need to be forgiven for exist because of an entire system that I was silently complicit in supporting. And so what can I do to work on that? I will absolve myself in time by making efforts in doing that. That is the thing. That is where it comes from. Not in prioritizing you being better, because you're being better by doing better. And it's not for cookies. That's where it needs to show up.
It's not for cookies. I love that. Now, along those lines, one of the conversations, like sort of one of the underlying themes, if you will, of what you and I are working on is values. And I feel like I have strong values, like personally and in the business. But what you're also shining light on is that there's so much room for evolution of those values. Can you kind of talk about that? And I want to work our way into, once somebody makes a decision that this is, you know, I want to make a shift in the business, this is why, they start working on their values. Again, I'm going through this literally right now. They're going to find people in their world, if you will, that don't align with those values, whether friends or acquaintances or whatever it is. And so I want to work into like how to navigate that. Granted, we could have a whole podcast episode about that, but talk about, you know, the evolution of values in what we're talking about here.
So I want to look at it from the sense of how we evolve as humans. If we think about ourselves with 5, 10, 15, and 20 years in between them, okay? And so I'm giving space for wherever you fall age range. You have an opportunity here to fall in versus like, ooh, y'all been here for a while. Y'all got a lot of space to navigate. Because I think that when you think about the stretches of time, we can all clearly see where our eating habits have changed. Our spending habits may have changed. Our spirituality may have changed. Our friend circles have changed. Our locations may have changed. Our mindsets have changed. Our familial relationships have changed. And so there has to be this awareness that nothing is static ever. And so there's no reason why we should be putting this unrealistic expectation on our values all of a sudden, specifically when it comes to our businesses, to be static. They're not static. And that's a false reality to even remotely try to push there. And it's very limiting to assume that, you know, 3 years ago, you know, I woke up and decided I wanted to change my life. And today I'm still waking up with that same exact thought process in the same exact place, doing the same exact things and no additional realizations that have happened. I've been doing it wrong if that's the case. That's not how that works. And so it is a natural progression that should happen with some of these things. Some of the pieces of this are going to be jarring. Some are going to feel a little more gentle. Some are going to feel very natural, even if they're not easy. Something can feel necessary and like, yeah, this needs to happen, and still be painful at the same time. And so we have to understand that if we hold space for bringing diversity into our business, as an example, what diversity means today will likely have some additional nuances that you have more of an awareness of when you look at it again in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. And that should happen because that means that you're paying attention. That means that you're doing the work. That means that you're acknowledging where things are happening. You're listening to the context that people choose to bring to you. And you are more than anything willing to adapt and be fluid and malleable with this process versus being so rigid that the process can't play out.
Yeah, love that.
So, I mean, I think the thing that comes up is just people, they get afraid. Working on value stuff is not always comfortable. And so fear shows up. They're like,
yeah,
what if I did change? What does that mean about me? Did that make me a liar before? And can I live up to what I'm saying I'm doing? They don't leave space for things to be aspirational in its nature.
Yeah.
But it inherently becomes this process that you tell yourself means something about who you are and your own validity and worth. And you have to say, well, if this is what I'm doing to me, what am I doing to others?
Mm. We have our values workshop coming up in a few weeks in June. And that's been scheduled for a while too. And I'm so pumped about doing that because, you know, my invite to my whole team and just super, super excited to dive into that. Now, as we start to wrap up, I do want to get into kind of like tactically, because questions, for example, are starting to come up more and more in my accelerator program. It's like, okay, hey, I want to make this shift. Where do I begin to make my team more inclusive? How do I make my company culture more diverse and inclusive? Where does one start in that area? Those areas, safety. I should say.
Safety has to come first. You can't make anything more diverse or inclusive if it's not safe to do so. So before you can insert people here, it needs to be safe for them to be there. And before you can evaluate if it's safe and will carry out the intentionality of the impact that you want it to make, you need to know your values. Nothing good is going to come from moving without intentionality. And so what my business partner, India Jackson, and I have recognized is the work that I do in Erica Corday, the marketing and branding and visibility work that she does in Fire and Fire, when we combine under Pause on the Play, we remind people that there is no auditing of company culture. There is no auditing of your online presence. There is no looking at your hiring practices. None of those things can happen if we have nothing to vet them against. And when we realized that, it completely changed the way that we work with people. And as much as people can say, oh, I know my values, I'm like, I know, and we're going to do this anyway. And they come through with a different level of awareness that they didn't have that would have completely shifted anything that they had done without it. Because if you think about, I want to change who I bring in. Okay, who are you bringing in? Why? How do they benefit from it? What does it look like in action? What happens when it doesn't go well? How does it feed into your other values? You can't answer any of these questions if you're not clear on those core values, what it goes back to, and that why. Like, there's just no way that we can skip over what feels like, oh, I don't need to do it. No, you need to pause and you need to know your purpose. And your purpose ties back into those values, because once you have it, it then makes every other decision so much easier, because there's no way to create a more diverse or inclusive environment until you know, these are my values. And I can clearly see from this what diversity means within my brand and how this shows up in action. I know what I mean when I use the word inclusive. I know who I'm including, because fun fact, people keep throwing the word inclusive around. When I talk about inclusion, it's not to include everyone, because if you're including everyone, you're not including anyone. When I do work, anyone that was a part of the insurgency at the Capitol, I'm not speaking to you. I'm not including you.
Yeah.
And so I have to consciously be aware of who I am including and who I am not including, so that I can hold that space actively for those that I want to be welcome and safe there. And that can't happen by trying to play the come one, come all game, which is a lie.
Yeah. Perfect example. I've been using inclusive throughout the episode here. Just another example.
The minute I show up in the room, people always get nervous that, like, if they don't put diversity, equity, and inclusion on their list of values, that I'm going to come for them. And I'm like, I promise you I'm not, because I don't want it to be a standalone value. I would much rather it be the lens through which this value comes to life. So I actually don't look for that. But inclusion is one of those words that we have this idea that it means we have to now include all of these people that weren't already being included, but we don't know why we're including them and what actually are the connecting threads that has them all there. So it's just more about having that pause of like, if I say having these people included matters, why? Who's being included? You know how they, do they feel included or did you decide that they felt included?
Yeah.
And so there has to be that pause again to say, if I use a word that unfortunately is overused and can be a buzzword, what does it actually mean when I use it? And so when I do workshops, like I have a DEI Foundations workshop, I start it with definitions. I have a workshop that I do around awards programs and give back components. I start it with definitions so that there is not that misconception of what am I saying? What do you think I'm saying? And let's get rid of this disconnect.
Yeah. So let's just say that somebody is clear on their values and knows the direction that they want to go and maybe shift to in their business and in themselves. I think we've answered the question about how to incorporate this into company culture, if you will, by what we just talked about. What about, so hiring, again, we're clear on our values, we're clear on why and all that stuff. So where does one begin to look out in order to basically approach hiring differently than the way that we always have?
I think part of it still goes back to what we just talked about in as far as the safety, because you don't want to hire people and you're bringing them into an environment that isn't safe for them to actually be a part of the team. So that's where you do have to have that clarity of like, okay, well, what does it mean to be a member of the team here? If everyone that is here identifies as a man and we bring a single mother into the fray, is there anything that we're missing? And I mean, obviously, this is a very specific and hopefully like you clearly can get where that's a thing there, anyone listening. But I think sometimes we have less obvious natures there. And it's like, well, I'm not quite sure what it is that would be specific. And so this is where the network piece, I think, comes in, because we often go to hire. And if you are paying attention to, okay, you know, is it inclusive? Have I done these things? Great. But then you go to that same old group of people asking for the same referrals and you're going to keep getting the same people. You post in the same job board. You're going to keep getting the same types of results.
Yeah.
And so there needs to be that diversifying of your network and not from a place of, I just need to have one Black person in this industry and I'm good. This is not a check the block thing.
Right,
this is about openly, honestly, and authentically connecting with diverse people that have expertise in their fields that are diverse individuals. They just happen to be diverse individuals, not because they're diverse, but they happen to be.
Yeah.
The primary part is that they have expertise in these areas. And then you can ask them, hey, where do you post? Or do you know of anyone that could be a good fit for this? You can have these conversations. You've already been in dialogue with them. If they feel comfortable with you and they're sharing with you, you know, some of the changes that you could make or some of the changes or experiences that they're having. And it's like, oh, I can see that that's not good. And I want to make sure I'm not contributing to that. And so you can see where some things can change and being in relationship. But the beauty is in being in relationship, you can completely change your client pool. You can completely change your hiring pool. You're going to completely change who you're going to bring onto your events and your podcast, your event pool. You're changing everything because you've now seen people for the benefit that they bring as being amazing at what they do versus curating people simply because they check the Black box or the brown box or the, you know, I have a uterus box.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's, you know, that's a big part of it because, you know, There's pieces of like, you know, doing culture fit interviews and being able to clearly have your values inside of your handbooks, having these values show up in your job postings. These types of things are the tangible things, but you can't get there without, again, having those values. But if you're posting it in the same place, it's still not going to matter because you still might not have access.
Yeah.
To different types of people and individuals to do something differently. So you have to essentially get out of your bubble and do something differently and be in conversation and relationship with different types of people without the expectation of what you're going to receive from it. But understanding that everybody benefits if you make good choices that are not just about you.
Which is kind of come full circle here, talking about being vulnerable and being and like, okay, I'm maybe a little bit nervous or what have you, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that this is a process. So obviously I want to give your contact information. So someone listening right now has made the decision, I want to be better here. Where does one start? Like, are there websites that you recommend? Like, obviously I want people to start with you. You have been, I feel like we've been barely working together, and my literally every time we chat, my brain is, that's why it takes so long to get to back to you, because I'm literally processing everything that you say. And, you know, you told me like, no, that's good. Like I encourage like processing of it. And so ericacordae.com, ericacordae.com. Mm-hmm. Where else can people connect with you? Because you've got a whole bunch of different offerings that you talked a little bit about it today. So let's start there.
Absolutely. Again, I've mentioned before Pause on the Play, which happens to be a brand that my business partner, India Jackson, and I run. You can learn more about that at pauseontheplay.com. There you can learn about our upcoming implicit to explicit workshops, which are the public, which we only limit it to 6 at a time. So they're not large gatherings, but our public gatherings, very similar to what Rick talked about. We're going to do a private one with his team, but we have some public ones coming up. We have one in June, one in September, one in October. There are a few seats left. So you can go on to pauseontheplay.com/events to learn more about it and sign up for that. While you're there, you can also learn more about the podcast. I have over 100 episodes, so there's no excuse for you to be able to listen if you're not ready yet to be in conversation. There's an opportunity for you to be able to take in some context and hear what's happening, give yourself some journaling prompts to kind of go off on your own with, but it gives you an opportunity to listen. And I think that's one of the most important things to start with. We also have Pause on the Play, the community, which is a mighty network space that we have where people that are looking to do better and be better in community with others, they can do that. You can learn more about that on the Pause on the Play website /community. And outside of that, the biggest thing that I tend to recommend is to listen, to pay attention, to diversify the content that you're taking in, movies, music, television, social media, all of the things. And if you're looking for a book recommendation, so you want to talk about race, by Ijoma Oluwa, mm-hmm. is always the first place that I tell people to start. I do not say white fragility. That is the tricycle. Don't do that. You can do more than that. Don't jump to How to Be an Anti-Racist quite yet, though, by Ibram X. Kendi. You're not ready for that yet. But So You Want to Talk About Race is just such a masterful book. And she does an amazing job of giving you a place to really consider what to do while not coddling you and also not shaming you. It's an amazing book and I highly recommend it.
I will reorder the books that I'm reading now that I know that. Okay, awesome. Erica, thank you so much for coming on here. As I told Erica right before we hit record, like I do most guests, I'm saying, you know what? I have a blank document in front of me. I kind of, especially with you, Erica, honestly, I was a little bit like, ooh, I don't know like where we're going to go here. Mm-hmm. But I say, you know what? This is like me and you sitting down for coffee. And we're just going to chat. And You said good, because those are the types of conversations that I love. And so thank you for coming on and sharing your expertise. Amazing. Guys, I'll link all of those links and programs and everything that in the podcast that Erica just talked about in the show notes for today's episode. So Erica, thank you again for coming on. Super appreciate you.
Thank you again for having me, Rick.
Hey, if you're an online course creator or you're an online coach and you're already averaging at least 7 to 8K per month in your online business and you're looking to scale, you want to optimize towards the next level in your business, whatever that next level is for you, because it is different for everyone. But you're now spinning your wheels. You're kind of overwhelmed. You're not really sure what to be doing in order to grow and scale without working more hours, because I'm all about simplicity and working fewer hours so that you could be making more money. If this is you, if you think that you'd like to work with myself and my team and a group of other amazing like-minded online entrepreneurs, then I want to invite you to apply for my accelerator coaching program. Again, it's application only. We are accepting applications. So just go to rickmulready.com/accelerator to learn more and apply. All right, my friend, as always, super appreciate you for tuning in to all the episodes here on the show. Episode number 500 is coming up in two more episodes. Super excited to share that with you. So until the next episode, be well, my friend, and I will talk to you soon.